broadcasting from Hollywood, California. It's Grant's Rants, Hollywood Talk.
Adele tells people to F off. Caitlyn Jenner's popularity wanes. Renee Zellweger is immune to critics of her face. And we go deep with our spiritual selves. Get inspired with co-host Lori Marlowe now. Let the ranting begin. I'm sitting across from Lori Marlowe. I am so excited for this show. Author, actor, illustrator, and spiritual eclectic. And I just find Lori to be brilliant, and she's such a supporter of this show, it makes me feel like I'm really doing something big here with this podcast.
No, so Grant, you are.
thank you. Lori, we have known each other for a while now, actually, longer than we think. When I was an NBC page, Lori and I worked in the same office, and she insisted on having two desks, and one of them was in a private location. I said, wow. This girl gets things done, and she knows what works for her, and be damned if nobody else likes it. And I said, well, I really like it. I mean, I remember you told me, you know, you had your own kind of, office in a file room, and you would do yoga in there, and you would meditate, right?
Yes, and my dolls were there with me having their dialogues, and then there was, like, a public desk next to a girl that never turned her TV off even when she took a two-hour lunch. And what I did was I just find ways to help my environment help me.
Yeah, oh yeah.
To somehow get my environment to support me. And it was fabulous.
It worked out. You made that work for yourself. I loved it. We would have great long chats. And now Lori and I are both Geminis.
Very.
So we really connect on a lot of different levels. We speak the same language without even necessarily having to say certain things. And I have a very similar relationship with my grandmother, who has been on the show quite a bit. So I'm really excited for this episode. And we're going to delve a little bit into being grounded in Hollywood and really coming in touch with our spiritual selves. And how do we get there? And how do we kind of eliminate the noise that is constantly in our faces out here? There's the traffic, the long hours at work, and the pressure to keep up with everything. So that's, I want to kind of delve into the spiritual side of how it is to exist here.
Well, that's been a journey for me because I'm a natural pleaser, and coming out here, it's different from New York. If they want you in New York, they do or they don't, and they'll tell you and you can move on with your life. Out here, I realized I could get maybe'd to death.
That's
call
the difference.
Me in 3 weeks. Well, call me next month. But I would. I would keep writing it down and calling them because I didn't understand. And then I realized if I continued to look outside for approval, if I left every meeting, every exchange, every audition wondering, why did they say that? What's wrong with me? What can I address? That I would always be even more scattered than I am. And I've got to say that, I mean, I chant. That's my main practice, you know, Nichiren Buddhism. And I realized because I'm looking at something twice a day that symbolizes my own most centered life condition, that it gave me those moments to revisit my own truth, my own value. So my center, at least twice a day, would come back to myself. And when I went out into the world and got everyone's opinions on you, I had a place to come back to and remember my worth.
On that same note, let's talk about Renee Zellweger and how her appearance has changed, but yet she remains grounded herself and she remains in focus of who she is and doesn't allow social media to really kind of, you know, turn things around on her. Now, granted, this girl, I'm a huge fan of hers.
Yes.
And I loved her in Chicago. That movie put, like, this business on the map for me. Like,
That movie, I
didn't even want to see it. And I went, I saw it, and then it became something bigger than it could have been for me, and that's how I got into kind of producing my own little stuff.
Oh, wow.
And so she has a special place in my heart. However, no one can deny that she has done some things to change her appearance, you know, and she's, you know, pretty much denied all of this. And of course, like, we know a year and a half ago there was like that whole thing about Renee, is that you, and a lot of work done nonetheless. And I always usually try to give people the benefit of the doubt. I don't really sometimes notice people unless if they look like a melting candle in the sun. You know what I mean? I really don't notice. So, but with her, it was noticeable, and I kind of felt bad. But in a recent interview on the Today Show, where she was promoting her new movie, Bridget Jones' Baby, she is going to, you might as well plug that here too. She's just saying, like, look, she doesn't pay any attention to that stuff. That is not part of her life, and it just is part of the job.
You know, I heard her say that, but I don't think that I believe her. She did say that in her home, in her life, she doesn't think about it until she comes out and does her job. Mm-hmm. But for women, that means all of us in the world at our jobs. Nobody asked Robert Mitchum, who did indeed look like that melted candle, why he didn't get an eyelid lift. You know, no one is putting a photo of Tom Cruise next to Tom Cruise now and asking what happened to you.
Or John Travolta. Now, that's really what happened. What happened with that? Have you seen
Thank
him?
You. Sly Stallone. I mean,
yes.
And even if they did do work, I've had work done. I have had work done since my 30s. And when I see someone who's a contemporary of mine, and I can tell if they say to me, oh, wow, you look good, if there's an edge to it, if there's a sad edge to it, I will tell them what I've done. I will tell them everything I've done, because I don't think women who are under such siege in American culture should let others think that they got the bad genes, mm-hmm. but you got the good genes. You know, as long as we're all in the same boat, when I see women who don't own it, who say, well, you know, it's just good diet, good genes, I drink a lot of water, it's like, oh, you do fucking not. Can I say that?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's like, I can't remember now if it was Kim Novak or Jacqueline Bisset. I love them both. They are both amazing actresses of a certain period. And in the same year, they had Kim Novak, because there was a documentary, mm-hmm. and she was on TCM, and she was amazing and eloquent and extraordinarily vulnerable. And Jackie Bisset, who had won an award. In fact, they sat her so far back in the Golden Globes because they didn't think she would win it. Now she had to fight her way in. And both of them got attacked virulently for how they looked. And they had done nothing other than to continue to be valuable female human beings who had gotten older and had had some work. And now people debated that work. And one of them, and it was such a great remark, I wish I could remember who said, what happens to women, and maybe they were talking about in the business, they said, we're attacked for getting older, for looking older. But then if we take measures to address it, then we're ridiculed. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing we can do.
It does kind of put people in a position, where they're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Yeah, and it's like there is a certain style of beauty that cosmetic surgery has created, and I am good with it. You know, you recognize it, you know you're seeing something that's engineered, but if it's done artfully, it's like, yes, Joan Rivers, you do look immeasurably better and different than if you had aged naturally. And I respect you. And I love you. And thank you, Phyllis Diller, for admitting every cosmetic surgery you did. I love you too.
It does make people feel better when they admit it. A lot of these people, like, they'll come on these morning talk shows and they'll just lie straight to your face.
Because then like women are punished for having done anything. Mm-hmm. It's like it's not enough for you to look beautiful. You have to look beautiful naturally. So there really is no way you can win. You can't. You're punished for growing old. You're punished for having any plastic surgery unless you can't see it. And if you can see it at all. But we know that there are actresses, Susan Sarandon, you know, whoever, amazing actresses. If you are over 45 and you have a great profile, your neck and chin, you've had something done. I don't care whether it's Botox or whether it was a lower face and neck lift. You've done something. I was thinking about Greta Garbo. I think she would feel vindicated for her decision to disappear after a certain age, to not let people see her and to decide to never, ever work again and not be seen in public. Because perhaps being a Virgo, perhaps she saw this coming, this age of deep punishment and anxiety in society to see a woman get older. I think it's anxiety.
Yeah, I think there's something tied to that, definitely. And you know, regards to beyond something like plastic surgery, looking at the whole breastfeeding movement that has women having even more pressure. This is a younger age now, you know, when women have this question whether they're, so it's at all ages, at all times. But, you know, basically Adele now is speaking out about this pressure to have to breastfeed. She has a, what is it here? She has a son that is 3 years old. And she claims that she was able to breastfeed for 9 weeks. Mm. And then after that, that was it. And she's basically, and she was in an interview when they asked her about this. And she said that, you know, people can go F themselves who find put pressure on people to do this. She said, you know, just it's ridiculous. Just it's effing ridiculous. And, of course, someone has to show out and show their ass. So this time it was Chef Jamie Oliver, and he says...
And Jamie is a male.
Yeah.
A male.
Yeah. Here we go. He says, we have the worst breastfeeding in the world. It feeds all sorts of things, like stunting, obesity, and health. So he's just feeding into the usual. Now, the conversation about breastfeeding has been done and been made. I believe that basically it's like, you do what works for you and don't put pressure on anybody else. That's a decision that they should be able to make for themselves, period. I mean, have people going around hospitals, knocking on women's doors. Are you breastfeeding? You know, here's the benefits. Read all this. Leave people alone. That's where I come from with this. But, you know, it's a bigger picture, and I think you want to say what you think.
Well, actually, I'm laughing at myself because the only thing maternal about me is my cat, Jasmine, and reading to pre-K kids once a week. But other than that, when I heard that breastfeeding would help a woman's stomach get flat faster, that the pulling on the breast would actually make the stomach muscles flatten and contract, it's like, okay, I personally am seeing a point in this. But other
That's
than
about
that,
it, huh?
Yeah, that was literally it for me personally. But I don't think my brain cells are any lesser because my mother fed me with a bottle. I don't think that the millions of people around, it makes me crazy. People having opinions on what women should do with their bodies is making me crazy. Yeah. Yes, have an opinion as far as telling a woman not to shoot up, you know, or freebase when she's pregnant. Yes, definitely. If you see a woman smoking a cigarette and she's pregnant, sure, say something. But to take ownership of women's bodies, there was a... I'm addicted to that TV show, Jane the Virgin. Mm-hmm. And as Jane was going through the prenatal period and training and classes, there was a whole episode devoted to all the different opinions, all the intrusive different opinions she was getting, and the guilt tripping and her anxiety. And it's like, yes, her character decided to breastfeed. And she felt comfortable with it and her schedule allowed. But you're not hurting your baby. And in fact, last month or two, there was some study that debunked a lot of the hyped benefits they've said come from breastfeeding a child.
See, I feel like it's going to be like eggs. Like, you know, they say, like, eating eggs, it's good for you. Then next year, it's bad for you. Then it causes cancer. Then it couldn't be anything better for you to have. But you shouldn't eat it raw. But if you eat it raw, there's more benefits. So it's like, I feel like it's going to be like that. Like, you know, they'll just never really come to a conclusion. And someone's always going to make someone feel bad.
And a woman is going through a hard enough time suddenly having a new little human being in her arms to then have to be guilt-tripped about, do I or don't I, am I producing milk? And if I leave it in the refrigerator, will my husband or boyfriend drink it? How do I label it? Breast milk?
To me, it just seems like an incredible amount of work. Women having to pump for hours, women having to take time, like a lot of women go back to work, and they have to go into these pumping rooms and take time out of their jobs, which are as hectic enough, especially when you're coming off of a maternity.
And then having to navigate sometimes hostile public environments, where then, okay, if you're going to whip your breast out in public, I know it's a biological thing, breasts weren't created to be decorative, they have a function, but no, once you've whipped your breast out in public, you cannot stop people from having an opinion or feeling comfortable or uncomfortable or wishing that that their little child was not watching this. So just navigating the public domain It's huge.
Mm-hmm. I know it's a natural thing, but when I have seen it, I just do. I mean, I'm just not used to seeing such things. So it's kind of like, you know, it's like someone, you know, with religious practices in public. It's kind of like, oh, well, you know what I mean? But you do you know, that's, it's clearly important to you to do that. And that's fine. You know, not hurting anybody. But with me, I mean, it is something I notice. I feel like for me personally, that would be something I would want to do in private. But it's a natural thing.
Yeah. And you can't always do it in private.
That's it. Especially in the workplace. Now it's getting better with providing spaces.
Now, I do have some problems with women that decide that they're going to nurse until a child is 3 and a half.
Oh, well,
that is disturbing on a whole other level for me.
When does it stop? When does it stop? That's the thing. So Adele,
before he starts to date, stop it then.
It's like they say, if the kid can ask for it, forget it. It's over. Don't continue. So what do you think of Adele's comments? What do you think of her basically telling everybody that's effing ridiculous to put pressure on the women and go F off?
I think she was absolutely right. I love the British for that.
Yeah.
I love the British for their outspokenness. Not only was it a man speaking out on what a woman should do. And it's like, unless you're his wife and you need to listen to him, you know, to pontificate about it. No. And I loved the fact that because she's Adele, when she says it like that in such a real way, she's speaking for millions of women that might have felt cowed and intimidated, you know, to feel like, okay, you know what? Yes, thank you. Now I can at least show this to my mother or my niece or my husband or my boyfriend and say, you know, not everybody is on board with this. Just F it.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yep. That's the best thing you can do at some point. Let's talk about another woman that has been facing ridicule with her politics, really. Caitlyn Jenner. I know you wanted to talk about her. I know you have a lot to say about her. You have, you know, very strong feelings. Yeah.
I love her.
She recently was introduced to Hillary Clinton, and she's, you know, it's been on record, even on her show, that she says, look, Hillary isn't going to do anything for the country. You know, she's lousy. She never accomplished anything.
She's an effing liar, and on and on.
Yeah, I watched a lot of those clips. I kind of caught up a little bit on Caitlyn's show.
Yeah.
And, I mean, everyone expected that when she had made, after she had come through the transition, that she would be like a liberal, like, I'm coming through as a whole new person. Mm. But yet, you know, her values have stuck with her, whether you agree with them or not. And it's been kind of polarizing for a lot of people. She was like a mega celebrity when she made that transition. Mm. I mean, I know at the LA Gay Pride Parade this year, they had Caitlyn t-shirts that were sold like in droves. And now you're seeing people saying, I don't agree with her. And they're like leaving the train. They're leaving the train behind. What do you think?
Well, I had to come to terms with the fact that I love her, what she's done, what she's been through to get to where she is so much. But yes, I also assumed that, of course, she will vote her interests now. It's like, I'm a woman. I'm not going to vote for someone who's anti-choice or for someone who's attacking my body, my rights. But then I realized, and I went around and around with this with my husband, because he knows from the moment, you know, that first Diane Sawyer interview, how I feel. Thinking about her makes me happy inside. But then I realized I need to separate my very real affection for her and respect for her from my unreasonable expectation that she should have a nuanced intelligence. She was an athlete, and she was deeply closeted. And she couldn't live an authentic life or meet the people she might have liked to meet or have the intellectual discussions or debates that Bruce would have been afraid to have. Mm-hmm. And so I shouldn't expect her to be more than she is. I also felt that aside from spending all those decades as a privileged, moneyed white male, she was closeted. And if there is one place that is a really great place for a closeted person to hide, it is the Republican Party. So she may grow more and more uneasy as she realizes that Hillary leapt at a photo op with her and to greet her warmly and to encourage her to do what she was doing. Ted Cruz doesn't want that photo up.
Mm-hmm.
And Donald Trump would only take it for the most base, sexist, misogynistic reasons of his own. So it'll be a learning curve for her because she's not closeted anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's true. She has to really adjust to every part of her life, including this, which is the most heated debate. The most.
And I felt
polarizing.
Sad for her when she said, "No, you don't understand. You know, all of these Republicans, you know, they really want these rights and that." And everybody was looking at her with pity because she's hidden so deeply in there that she's only seen the best, quote unquote, of them. Mm-hmm. Because they thought she was one of them. My heart kind of aches for her a little as she may come to understand that the guys who would share a drink with her, make some jokes, you know, get on the golf course, they won't have the same feeling toward her. Mm-hmm. And that's another awakening. She's done so much. She's grown so much in 6, 7, 9 months, but she has some rough experiences to go with people that she thought embraced her as Bruce. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring that together with our Renee Zellweger and Kim Novak thing.
Yes.
Aside from how much I appreciate her vulnerability, her willingness to grow, the burden of having to do this in front of everybody. She has chosen to be a 65-year-old woman at a time when cis women who are 65 are not that hot about being a woman. You know, so, I mean, she has jumped into it at an age. It's like I was reading somewhere that that Linda, her second wife, that Elvis had said to her when they were dating that he felt attracted to Bruce. He said, "He's beautiful. He's beautiful," he said to her. It was recently on Google or something.
Interesting.
Several news outlets picked it up. He said, "I'm not gay, but he's beautiful." You know, and Caitlin had to do this, not during those years when we all looked at Bruce and thought, "Wow, that bone structure, that face, oh my God." She did it when most women are running. That's why when she gets attacked for having plastic surgery, it's like, cis women are having plastic surgery. Leave her alone.
Yeah, I mean, she does have a right to enjoy her time as well, you know, and if she's got the money to do it, then go ahead.
But yeah, do I wish that she would be attracted to women instead of men? Yes. Do I think she would have a better time and an easier time of it and a less judgmental time? Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. You know, and Chris has said that she, you know, I don't talk about the Kardashians on here, so bear with me. But Chris has even said that she is, like, confused by the whole thing, too. And that has to be a very hard pill to swallow for Chris to hear that.
Yeah.
I mean, after them being married and having to accept so much, just on a human level. To have to accept that is tough, but it's not her news to accept. I mean, they're
exactly
together.
Exactly, so. For a whole bunch of reasons that had nothing to do even with the transition. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was interesting when Caitlin was talking about how she was afraid to date a man because of what her younger daughters would think. But I thought, is it also because she would fear that people might think, was Bruce, quote unquote, gay? When it was really obvious that, you know, that's why I had loved most of all that Diane Sawyer interview. The separation over and over between gender and sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
That they're absolutely separate. And, what is the name of the wonderful academic who's on I Am Kate?
I
even Facebook friended her. She's amazing. But here's this woman who is brilliant and still married, you know, to her female spouse. They made the transition together. But she actually said in this last episode that when the hormones started to hit, that she suddenly was shocked to find herself fascinated by males, by their energy, looking at them, admiring them, you know, wondering about them. And this is an individual who was living as a straight male and now was living as a gay woman. Mm-hmm. And so I had to be reminded that I can't understand what that change in hormones might be doing to someone who thought that their attraction was women no matter where they went. And also she has the fantasy of being taken care of. She grew up with those movies where doors are opened and drinks are poured and cigarettes are lit.
Yeah.
And I think she longs to experience that because if she was with a woman, she might revert to what Bruce would do. which is to be the gentleman, the caretaker.
Yes.
And I'd love for her to have, in one way or the other, one gender or another, the sensation, at least as she progresses, of being cared for, even though she is a tall-ass woman.
Yep.
But,
I know. I feel for Caitlin, though, because I just can't imagine what it would be like to now start dating men. And to, who would those men be? Mm. And I mean that in the nicest way. I just, you know, a very public, when you, you know, if we were to Google right now, transgender female, Grant, one of the top three pictures are going to be Caitlin. So it's like, it's almost like now she's become a poster child for this, and it's very hard to be private. I mean, everyone knows. So who do you find that would be a likely companion that would be so open-minded and understanding and perhaps even a fan of Bruce, perhaps someone who had a poster of Bruce?
I think the problem with dating a man is, and watching Caitlin in that, Candace in that last episode nailed it for me, because we know that Candace has had all the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
For all intents and purposes, no matter how you slice it, that is a woman that a man could function with who thought of himself as a straight man. And yet she still has problems. We don't even know how Caitlin would navigate, you know, or we don't need to know. We have no right to know any more details about any other surgery she ever does or doesn't do.
Yeah, that's true.
But it was interesting seeing Caitlin, who had been let down in the realm of cis men, find that there was a transgendered male. There were two of them on the last show, and one of them, well, they were both appealing. One of them was particularly appealing in a very Italian kind of way. And she found herself vibing with him. And she admitted in Caitlin's presence that perhaps she had been limiting herself, that she had not considered the transgendered males that had gone through their own journey. Yes. You know, and that Candace was now opening herself up to being with a man who understood more of who she was, you know, and what she had experienced in her life, because they were tasty and they treated her like the woman she is. And it was thrilling to see her get to that, because I thought, she's been out there so long, for Caitlin to see someone who thought she knew exactly where her attractions lay, open it up. It's like, you know, it's like black women saying, maybe I could date a white guy. Like that film, Something Different. Maybe I could. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I hadn't realized that we are all drawing lines about who we could be attracted to. Love you, Kristen Stewart. Glad you came out for No Boundaries lately. You know, we all draw, I like this type, not that type. I like men, I like women, I like this kind of man, this kind of woman. Or do we, until we meet a person who makes us think, oh, but I like this.
I totally agree. I think the new thing is, and that's not, and I don't even mean the new thing like a trend, I don't want to say it that way, but it's so acceptable now to be sexually fluid, and I think that's such a great thing. Because why put labels on people and limit yourselves? I'm like, I love options.
Jenny Boylan.
I'm sorry?
Jenny Boylan. I'm sorry. I had to blurt it out. The academic, the amazing academic. Thank you.
That woman that
you
mentioned.
Yes, on Caitlin's show. Yes.
Yes.
Sorry.
I just think all options should be on the table in life. Why limit oneself? And that's to anything. I mean, you know, in, if you can afford it and it's the right thing for you, in general, you know, just in general. So I, you know, like you mentioned, Kristen Stewart, I think, you know, fluidity is the new way to go.
And I think of Jenny Boylan's wife. Jenny Boylan's wife was a straight woman with a man she assumed was straight. But once that human being, that entity with everything she loved, became a woman, would she label herself a gay woman now? Yes, I'm still... It's like, no. She is a woman who loved a person who still loves that person.
And
they're married.
That's it.
Yeah.
And that's it.
You're listening to Grant's Rants. Please rate, subscribe, and share on iTunes and social media. Spread the word. There are a lot more rants to come. Follow us on Twitter at Grants_Rants. And now for the one-on-one.
Laurie and I are talking, and we're in Laurie's home here. And the vibe here, and I, you know, I could smell a beautiful scent coming down the hallway. I knew I was coming. It reminded me, like, I'm going to go in for, like, a yoga class or something. Like, I just felt like my blood pressure could drop, the shoulders could relax, and we could just kind of just chat and enjoy. So I love the vibe in here. We're at her West Hollywood. We're just south of the Sunset Strip in West Hollywood, her pad. And how long have you lived here?
I've lived here about 18 years.
Wow.
Since the moment my mother made me a gift of it. She said she didn't support my being an actress, but she would rather see me happy and safe while she was alive. And she did this amazing thing. And now me and my dolls, my stuffed animals are all happy and safe here.
Well, it's definitely a peaceful and safe environment. We're sitting on the floor here, Lori's bare feet, we're just chatting it up. So that's the vibe, and that's really kind of what I have been trying to introduce to my life, is a little bit of a vibe, kind of taking the edge off of life. That's kind of been what my trajectory has been recently. I want to talk about a little bit of a journey that I've been on that has inspired me to create this show today, specifically talking about spirituality and finding ourselves and just what we have to put out in the universe for our own beings. Last July, I was laid off from a job, and I thought it was kind of like, it was a great thing for me as like a human being, but financially it was a bad thing. And I was coming off a very stressful time with that job. It was not a good environment. So I started taking Kundalini yoga. And so that was what kind of got me on this path of where I am, of being able to really kind of do some self-exploration. Now, flash forward to like the beginning of this year, and I realized what I love about yoga is I like feeling sore the next day. That's good. But the part that gets me is the savasana, it's the meditation. That's what really has helped me. And so I said, well, why don't I take a meditation class? And I said, well, wait on that. Just wait on that. Because I had a lot of other things going on with trying to get other work. And, you know, in this business, it's very, it switches with the tides. I mean, it's like you work and then you're not, then you're up for something, then that fades away. You know how it goes. So I reached a point where my car had gotten totaled and I was in another mess that was not brought on by my own self. It was just the universe, really, because pushing me. And so I finally had to make a decision. And Kevin Undergaro, who is the executive producer at AfterBuzz TV, had mentioned meditation. And I always said, well, that's so LA. Like, I'm just not sure if I'm ready for such a thing. Like, I just don't know, what would I do? And then I said, you know what? When I was like needed a moment for myself. I needed to, because I got in a very bad car accident on a Monday at 8:30 a.m. And I had to work for 12-hour days all the way till Friday, and so I had no time to process anything around me. And so I said, all I want is a minute to myself. All I want is a minute to myself to eliminate. I don't want a phone in front of me. I don't want to feel like I need to be somewhere. I don't want to have to worry about eating. So I said, just take this class. Take a meditation class. So I found a place in West LA, and I've been going there, and it has really helped me out so, so much with centering myself. I had a fantastic meditation where I had visions of light and beauty, and it was really something I just never thought I would experience, to be honest with you. And it has helped me really to come to conclusions and make moves, or at least prepare to make certain moves with myself to be able to better myself and to move in a different direction. And this is something I just never thought I didn't grow up with this, self of spirituality and, really digging deep and what do I need to do for myself? And really also clearing the noise is something I've never done. You know, I just was like, just put on some music and take a drive. Like, that's what I used to do, you know? But now it got to the point where I needed to do a little bit more than that. And so I'm really doing work on myself that stems from yoga and now through this meditation. And I just think it's really like one of the best things I could have done. I'm like enlightened by it. Now, this is not something new to you, Lori. You've participated in this for a while, especially the practice of Buddhism.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been practicing for the last 4 decades Nichiren Buddhism. So we chant out loud, because the feeling in Nichiren Buddhism, we chant Nam-myoho Renge-kyo, which means dedication to the simultaneity of cause and effect through sound or teaching. Nichiren Buddhism feels that ourselves and our environment are one. We're two sides of the same coin. And so in chanting out loud, we're creating this vibration, but we're also melding with our environment. Our environment is working on us, and we are working on our environment. And there's the feeling of, and this is in like the 800-year-old writings about the shadow and the body, that a lot of us look at our environment as the body, and we become the shadow. Oh, no, it's moving. Wait, I have to move this way. No, I have to adjust. Wait, it went over there. Oh, my gosh. As opposed to what Nichiren Buddhism says, which is that we are the body, and our environment is the shadow. And when we think certain thoughts, take certain actions, maybe based on our conditioning, our past experiences, our inability to break out of that seventh level of consciousness, our karma storage, that when we think certain thoughts, take certain actions from a higher life condition, that our environment, the shadow, cannot help but cooperate with that. It's like Oprah Winfrey in that wonderful clip that you had me listen to.
Oh, yeah, there's an excellent clip from Own the Masterclass, which I'm going to put on my Twitter that we're going to reference. And Oprah had wonderful things to say. So, yeah, what was the point that came out of that that really stuck out to you?
She was talking about, she didn't say that it was Einstein's theory of relativity, but it actually was when she said that one of her tenets is for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. Now, she chose to take that in a different direction, but when Nichiren Buddhists reference that, it's because lots of times, you know, you'll start to chant or like you're getting to a different stage because of your meditations, and you start to make fresh causes, new causes, things you haven't done before. And there may be obstacles. And then the environment just starts to smack you and you're going in one direction, but the environment is used to you going in the same old direction, the direction that the environment has been going with you, cycling to the left, to the left. But now you've changed. A lot of people will then see that and think, that's an omen. That's a sign. I should stop. This is wrong. Whereas Nichiren Buddhism says, no, if you're chanting about this, if this is something you want, the fact that you are encountering obstacles is because it's what we call Sanshoshima, growth through a dangerous obstacle, where if you keep persisting, then if you have the courage to persist, then the environment will at some point be like, oh, we're going to the right now. We're cycling to the right. But that's the point at which some people stop before they get to experience being the body and not the shadow. There's this quote I think I told you, which makes me think so much of you, because I think that what you're doing is exactly what I yearn to do. I used to do it with my acting, but I know that I have better, more unique ways of doing it that are true, more true to me. That Daisaku Ikeda says, even if you have a kind heart, great ideas, or wonderful aspirations, if you don't have the courage to translate them into action, you'll accomplish nothing with them. In fact, you'd be no different from someone who doesn't have such things at all. But you keep changing your viewpoint, changing your message. You get centered and then you bring it to the audience. I've listened to the evolution of your show. And it's like experiencing your evolution with you. And still having fun, of course, because we're Geminis.
I still got to remain a little crazy. But yeah, no, that's it. But, you know, to your point, though, of what you were mentioning with kind of like persisting, though.
Yes.
That does kind of make me feel like perhaps I don't feel at all like I'm giving up on certain things, but I just feel like the universe is pushing me in the opposite direction. Should I continue to be kind of like hammering away?
Well, now, one of the things Oprah did say in that talk was what she called the whispers.
So that's what I'm referring to.
Yes. And
that
when,
hit home for me.
Yeah. And when we're in a higher life condition, she didn't say it, but yes, we do all hear those voices, but you're more apt, I think, to honor that whisper that says, turn left instead of right. Go to this party. No, go to that library. Go to that museum. Talk to that person. That when you're in a higher life condition, it's just more likely that you will hear that little whisper, that almost invisible thought in your head, and respect it, as opposed to other people like, nah, that doesn't make any sense. I'm not going to do it. I don't know what that is. As we grow up, we're surrounded so often by adults that have gone through their own lives and traumas, and they want to keep us safe. And so they feel that keeping us safe means inculcating us with all of their fears to keep us safe. But all that does is scare us away from some of the openness that could magnify our lives and have us carry forward. It could be fear of flies or gnats. Yeah. You know, parents are scared of lots of things, and we take them on. And the Abraham material It's if you want to go online, it's abraham-hicks.com. I feel that their languaging for, like what Buddhism is and what you're doing, rhythm, vibration, you know, thoughts, you know, everything emanating from us, that they have the best languaging for what things like The Secret or ancient Buddhisms are talking about. Their languaging is amazing.
Yeah.
And they talk about how children come in knowing everything. And if they're lucky, they hold on to that long enough in a secret part of themselves so that adults don't know what they're thinking until they can be their own person.
I have heard of this, and I do believe that, that people lose their way and they lose that sense of themselves. But some people do not, and those are the people that I kind of relate to a little bit more than others. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, the whole process for me has just really allowed me to really give up, to have faith more in just the universe, myself, and the Great One Spirit, you know, God. You know?
And I feel that it is a friendly universe. It's like Abraham talks about how a lot of people feel, no, I need to keep the bad out, or I need to keep the fat out, or I need to keep... And it's like, no, it's a matter of, can you open your vibration and your life to let the good in? Because that's really what's out there, if we can open our lives up to it. So I do feel that it's a nurturing, friendly universe.
I do. I do. Yeah, and you have to. I mean, that's the only way to look at it. You know, like you mentioned, vibrations. I mean, you can't look at it negatively. Nothing will come.
Well, things will come. They just won't be things that you want.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much. So we referenced this Oprah video. And, you know, Oprah speaks about many things. A friend of mine posted this on Facebook. And it's 10 minutes long, and it's a lot of Oprah talking about very deep things. Some things I really had to think about. Every time I listen to it, I hear something different. And so I will tweet this out on my Twitter account, grants_rants, if you would like to check out the video. Something that stood out to me was she said that she doesn't believe in luck. It's just circumstance meeting opportunity. And I found that to be very interesting, especially for someone you could argue is a very lucky person.
I think sometimes, we would call it luck. I think sometimes you see people that attract amazing things no matter what practice they may be doing. But I think it's because, or no practice. And I think it's because on some level they have instinctively clicked into that universal rhythm. They have done it no matter what philosophy they're embracing. They have found a way to affect their lives and open themselves up to it. Otherwise, there's no reason why someone, a good person, is born in one environment and an equally good person in another. Why two people doing the same practice? I mean, okay, this is going to sound awful. When I watch, you know, the Grammys or BET Music Awards, it's like, I know you're all thanking God, but I'm sure that everybody else was also praying to the same God. You know, and they didn't win.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think that their prayers were different. I think that there might have been something in the way they were channeling the energy or understanding what praying is or understanding what they felt they were praying to that opened themselves up to luck or rhythm or fortune. And I think that that's what happened with Oprah when she was, and I loved when she was talking about how when other people would look at the competition with her talk show and she would just say, we can't look at them. And that would be fear-based because you can only take care of yourself.
Run your own race.
Yes. Yes.
Yep, that's how I've had to live, and especially, and that is totally relatable to the business out here in Los Angeles. I mean, you know, the biggest thief of joy is comparison to other people, and that's another life point that I have embraced. And I don't know, I just, it doesn't resonate with me at all to have to continue looking at what other people are doing.
Right.
People I graduated with, people who are my age, well, this person is 26, and they're at this company. Well, isn't that great for them? I have a total different set of cards that I'm dealt. I can't fester about these things. I've had to let a lot go. And I think it's only really helped me learn and be able to appreciate what I do have and work with what I have and continue to create A lot of people that I've started out with here have come and gone. I have no friends here left.
And they're
from
probably
college.
Looking at you and thinking, he's still there. Why did I have to go home? So they're looking at you the way you're looking at those others.
The people, yeah. I am really the last man standing here. So it's been a very interesting journey, but I have had a very good, consistent career. And I've really, up until October of last year, really defined myself by my career success. And since then, I have really flipped the script and I've really focused more on what makes me a success as a person and not be so beholden to the resume. And I lived for a resume. I lived to not have gaps. I lived to move up, to make more money. I lived for that. And that's still a huge focus of why I am here and what I am doing, but it is not all of me.
One of the things that I loved that she said that also mirrored something I heard at one of our chanting meetings from Buster Williams, who's a great jazz musician, is that you are the perfect entity to fulfill your dreams. But then for me, the key word is your dreams. It's like I can look at someone else's accomplishments, but I can't be in their heads or in their lives. And I can barely be in my head, in my life, to know what would make me happy, really. Not what I think would make me happy, what would really make me happy. You know, and Buster Williams had said something wonderful at this chanting meeting. He had said, if a dream comes out of your life, if you conceived of it from your life, that means you have all the elements to fulfill it. Which came back together with me with the other things she had said, and that shows up like in my personal vows, that every place we've been, everything we've learned, every disappointment or fulfillment or lesson then comes together in the place that we end up. If we can keep self-referencing our own lives and keep our lives open.
Mm-hmm. You touched upon your own vows.
Yeah.
I want to go down that path, and I want to talk about I Do Me Wed, a big project in your life. You mentioned the animation
put
together.
150 cartoons of me and my girlfriends going through heartbreak and raising like a phoenix.
There you go. And that evolved into something much bigger.
Yeah, and it's funny because another book is actually taking precedence over it right now, but it's my passion project, and it's the process that I would like to teach. I had gone through a pivotal relationship that had all of the dysfunction of all of the previous relationships rolled into one. So when this finally exploded in my face, I see your eyebrows rising and there are little smiles happening. Yes, we've been there. So when it exploded, I was in such a state, I didn't even know what clinical depression was, but I did suspect that sitting in a car that was running in the parking lot of Farmer's Market, 15 minutes from home, and not being able to figure out what direction to drive in for 3/4 of an hour, that might be clinical depression. And so two girlfriends who had gone to the University of Santa Monica gave me the clue. One of them said, we wrote vows to ourselves in class. And then we said them, and it was very powerful. But I can't tell you how to do it because it was the culmination of 2.5 years of a psychology degree. Mm-hmm. And then the other girl who had said, you have to figure out what you wanted from him and give it to yourself. And I sat down on the floor here. I thought, I will sit here until morning. I must figure out a way to marry myself, to embrace myself. And I started to think about when you love someone, and you don't even have to write the words. Vows come out of you. I'll always love you. I'll always trust you. I'll always believe the best of you. I'll always nurture you. I'll always do what I can to make you happy. And then when it comes to us, you're going out in that? I can't believe you said that. I can't believe you went, oh, I'm so through with you. We say things to ourselves we would never say to a friend, certainly. Mm-hmm. And so I realized that as an actor, there are many ways into a character. And obviously, I needed to get closer to myself. So I did two things. I externalized myself. I took a childhood photo that felt like me. It wasn't my prettiest photo. And I was definitely pre-adolescent, before you start to rip yourself apart. But it was who I felt like inside. And I asked her the questions that an actor asks of a picture or a painting when there's not enough information about a character in the script and you want to know more. And I found myself writing pivotal questions to this little girl. You know, things like, what are the things I say to you that hurt you? What positions do I put you in that you wish I wouldn't? What are my beliefs about the way the world works that stop you in your tracks? How do I let other people treat you that you wish I would protect you from? And it's a list of 20 questions. And have you heard of left hand, right hand writing? It's like inner child work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually have.
And so that's exactly what I did. I wrote, so when I was having trouble with a question, I would write the question in my dominant hand. And then I would have her, my little Laurie, my little photograph, write the answer in her non-dominant hand.
You know where I heard this? Your video on YouTube.
Oh, that's
right.
That's
how I know it, yes. Laurie has posted part of this documentary on her YouTube channel, yes.
And you can see the doll, little Laurie, at a screen near you. And so there were vows that I came up with based on the acting technique that everyone's vows would be different, but after I came up with my top five vows, I carried them everywhere with me. They were in my bra. They were in my purse. They were at my altar. I got myself a ring that had love, honor, cherish. The same way that if someone is married and they're in a bar talking to someone tasty, but then they glimpse their ring and it's like, oh, I think I'm breaking a vow now or very close to it. So that just the glimpse of that ring as I was slandering my own life or making causes that I knew would leave me in a bad place or too hungry for someone's love or attention or approval, just a glimpse of that would just make me stop because I knew I was breaking a vow to myself. So let's, can I read some vows?
Yeah.
I have so many.
Curious.
I keep writing different ones. I vow to appreciate and commend all, I repeat, all actions you make on my behalf, not replaying, amending, or regretting them. Confident that you acted with the full instinct, wisdom, and knowledge at your disposal at that moment on behalf of my happiness and highest good. Because I was always filled with regrets. Why did you say that? Or why didn't you say that? Or why didn't you think of that then?
The worst thing you could do is regret, really.
Instead of appreciating, I did my best.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a certain amount of information. And thank you for that. I vow to remember that although you have been shaped by your past, you are not limited by it. Everything you have experienced has given you a unique springboard and foundation that will catapult you from the present into your most wonderful future. Instead of the regrets about, I lost that job or that relationship or I squandered this money, why did I do that? It's like, no. And then I had experiences from those things. And then they all came together. Oh, and then just this one. I promise to remember that being lovable and being perfect have nothing to do with each other. Please always know that I love you because you are perfectly you. Because I know I have deeply loved some deeply imperfect people, and I was right to love them. Mm-hmm. So I need to extend that to myself.
To yourself. You know what they say, you owe it to yourself. I love those. I think that's work that anyone should do, even in their own head. But to write it down, I'm sure, is much better and more.
So I would like to do some workshops to lead people through it, like an acting class.
Yeah. I can definitely see how that's rooted in acting, studying of characters, shaping and all that. I'm familiar with that process. I know exactly where you're coming from. Laurie, this conversation has just been great. It's been deep, huh? It's been kind of deep, guys. And I like it. I like that we're kind of expressing different sides to what it's like to exist, and what we're saying can apply to really anyone, anywhere. It doesn't have to be in Hollywood. So Laurie, what do you want to promote? What's coming up for you? What's going on?
You know, I don't have anything in particular of my own I am promoting right now. I have a wonderful project that fell out of option with Jada and Will that I've now written the script on. So I want to keep that close to my vest because it's an extraordinary real-life character and very dear to me. I do me wed, which I do want to teach that. And if anyone were to get hold of me or inbox me on Facebook at Lori Marlowe, you know, I would hold small sessions, small intimate sessions, wherever they would like, just to put them through the process to creating and honing their own vows in 2.5-3 hours. There's another book based on Nichiren Buddhism, The Victory and the Obstacle, that is with a wonderful agent now. So once again, you're not supposed to talk. And of course, my husband, Robert Hooks, we've co-authored his memoir, More Than Myself, at the crossroads of arts, culture, politics, and the civil rights movement. So that's probably first up because he's so visible.
Yes, yes. Wow. There's so much that you do, Lori.
Gemini, you know.
Yep. It's like, who can keep up? But somehow we do. Somehow. I mean, I just went through a list the other day of things that are on top of mind.
Yeah.
And there were about 11 items that were on top of mind. And it's all stuff that cannot slip. It's all stuff I have to do and deal with. And it's stuff I want to do.
Exactly. You want to. You have the appetite to do it. And as long as we have the appetite and the energy, who says you can't spread a wide net?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I do want to mention, when you were talking about how we were talking about things of some depth and heft today, but with a certain spirit, there's a wonderful quote that one of the that the head of the Producers Guild a while back gave to us at Studios USA. Angels fly because they take themselves lightly. The Dalai Lama has a sense of humor.
Yes.
And he is not talking frivolously, but yes, angels fly because they take themselves lightly.
Words to live by, folks. I hope you got something out of this show for sure, because, man, there was a lot put on the table here, and I think it was just fantastic. And it's a great opposite way of to look at life than what is given on television and what we see in the mainstream. And that's something that is true to this show. I said from the beginning with the Kardashians, you can get that news anywhere. But over here on this show, you can get news that you can't just get anywhere. So I like that. And I like that we can have these discussions. And I hope you found it as enlightening as I did. You guys can, you know, you can always check us out on our YouTube channel. That's Grant's Rants Hollywood Talk. And Lori, where can we find you on social media?
Lori Marlowe at Facebook. Go ahead. I am on Twitter under the same thing. And I am arm wrestling with myself to find out how to do a Squarespace site.
Oh, yeah.
But that's my own human revolution and hell.
I bet. Yep, yep. Well, that'll do it for us. Please feel free to check out Lori on social media. And don't forget to like Grant's Rants Hollywood Talk on Facebook. Lori, thank you so much
thank
for the conversation.
This has been Grant's Rants. Follow us on Twitter at Grants_Rants. Cover art created by Howie Roné. Voiceover by Sir Richard Wentworth. Original theme music composed by Alexander Arnson.